Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. My name is Ronsley and I am in sunny Dubai doing this introduction for you. And we're talking with Maribel Lara. She is the VP at the Sasha Group, which is a VaynerX company. I do this conversation and this recording at the VaynerX offices in Hudson Yards, New York. It's an amazing conversation. We talk about making sure that stories are told, making sure that we use our voices, making sure that these conversations are not left and as a podcaster, we have a responsibility. The responsibility is to make sure that we refine our voices, we refine our arguments, we make sure that we talk about the things that we care about. And we have this great conversation, Maribel and myself, about podcasting. And I think you should listen.
You can't find your voice if you don't use it. This is We Are Podcast, formerly called Should I Start a Podcast? A podcast for podcasters who want a podcast that grows their business and brand. How many times can we say podcast in a sentence? Here's your host, Ronsley. He has interviewed more than 1,500 people, has been listened to over 5 million times in 133 countries. He has helped create over 1,100 podcasts for businesses, brands, and personalities. He's been doing this for more than a decade. Get ready to take notes. Enjoy the show.
What I want to get, especially on recording, is what you spoke about yesterday, very briefly, you just touched on it, but female representation in leadership. And I think it's an important topic to talk about. And I want to start with, what do you see are the differences from your perspective? Because you know what? Here's why.
Yeah.
We have no idea. I know because as a brown man, I know a white person doesn't understand. I have to find better ways to explain it. And that's the reason to open the conversation that way is like, what are we not seeing and how can we see it? What are you seeing that we need to see?
Interesting. So I think that it's important to understand what my background in women in leadership is.
Yeah.
I grew up in a home where my mom was a stay-at-home mom, but she was pretty freaking tremendous. Mm-hmm. Right. So my mom came to this country from Peru at 12.
Yeah.
She was disabled. So she contracted polio at a very young age.
Yeah.
And up until she came to this country, her mobility was crawling around on the floors or being carried to places. She lost her mother when she was only 2 years old.
Wow.
So she was raised by her great grandmother in poverty in Peru. But she didn't have access to education. The school was too far and she couldn't be carried to school, right? Because adults had to work and kids were too small to carry her. She came here at 12 with no education whatsoever. She had an uncle who was a merchant marine who first brought his sons over and then decided he was going to bring my mom and her sister, who was a year older than my mother was. So he brought them over. My mom almost immediately went to Bellevue Hospital here in New York City. And probably lived the first 2 years of her life in New York City in that hospital, undergoing a number of different surgeries to straighten out her legs and then physical therapy to learn how to walk with braces and crutches.
Wow.
So if you mind, right, like, first of all, just going through that makes you a strong individual, right?
100%.
You don't speak the language. It is an entirely new, like, culture. You're not educated in any way, shape, or form, and you're now being sent to a hospital where you gotta fend for yourself.
Yeah.
And she came out thriving. She learned how to not only speak English, but also, like, started her reading in English. And it gave her enough of a foundation that she was able to go to the public school system in New York City. You know, she had a teacher, like, listen, Rena, you're very far behind when it comes to education. But there are programs for people with disabilities, like, why don't you go to this program? So she ended up going to high school where she learned technical skills. She learned how to build and repair radios.
Wow.
And that then translated into a career in building and repairing radios with an organization that was, you know, their mission was to create job opportunities for individuals in the disabled community. So there were opportunities put in front of her, but she also took advantage of those opportunities and thrived with those opportunities. Mm-hmm. So imagine disabled Latina woman in the 1950s and 60s in New York City. She had a career. That was a big deal for any woman in the 1960s. To be a woman of color and a disabled woman and to have accomplished that is a really big deal. And so she left the workforce when she got pregnant with my sister. She wanted to be a stay-at-home mom.
Yeah.
She told my dad, it's time for you to go get a steady job, because up to that point, my dad had been doing whatever he could to make money. She was like, no, now you need to go and like find something steady. So my dad, also amazing, had like a 30-plus year career in the hotel industry in New York City. But I knew just how amazing my mother was. And I grew up in a household where we could never say that you couldn't do something. Mm-hmm. Because how dare you look my mother in the face? Her answer was like, you have two legs.
Yes.
Damn, that makes it really difficult to just like give up. So that's the female figure that I grew up with in my household. And my mother was always like the center. She was the head of the family for both my father's family and her side of the family.
Got it.
Everybody came to her, right? My dad was the second oldest on his side. And so as his siblings started coming to this country, they all referred to my mother as Doña Lina. But just for anybody who doesn't speak Spanish to understand, that is like, doña is like a sign of respect. So just so everyone knows, like, there's a term of respect.
Yes.
They could have very well called her by her first name because this was their brother's sibling. They never would have dared, right? Because they just respected her and they saw her as like the female, like, figure.
Yeah.
In this family.
Yes.
And so she was where people would go for advice.
Yeah.
She was the listening ear, but she's also very firm. So like that's for me always been like the North Star in terms of like how to carry myself. How do I also care for people, right? How to find this balance of like being tough, but always from a place of care and wanting the best for people.
Yeah.
And they're not being ego in it, and they're not being any of like my own like personal desires. You know, intentions. And then I had the good fortune of going to an all-girl high school here in New York City. It was a small high school, so my graduating class was 55 young women.
Yeah.
That's it. Every example, right? Like, having gone to school with an entirely, like, female population, I saw amazing women all around me, and amazing in a variety of different ways, like artistic and both, like, in, you know, painting and drawing, but also acting and singing, and people who you knew would go into like medicine, right? Like the science
field. Yeah.
That was my foundation. My, like, I grew up with a foundation of always seeing phenomenal women.
Yeah.
I've always gravitated towards women. In college, I helped to found a chapter of a Latina sorority on the campus.
Of course.
Because I wanted to be around women, but I also wanted to be around Latina women.
Yeah.
And that gets to your point of it is different.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so many of us were first generation. We were trying to break the stereotypes of being Latino.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that time. And then also trying to break the stereotypes of being women.
Yes.
Right? And so it's just like, somebody's got to understand the double whammy. Like, I need a support group that understands that double whammy.
And it's hard. I mean, unless someone else has witnessed what you've been through, it's super hard to empathize.
It is. You know, there's so much talk about like imposter syndrome these days, but I'm like, let's not get wrong that there's also like real, there's a reason some of us feel like imposters, and it's because people tell you outright that you are, right? Like on a college campus, like I went to Tufts University in Massachusetts, you know, not a massive campus, but there also weren't a whole lot of Latinos.
Yeah.
I had really good grades. I went to a college prep high school, right? I came in with college credit. I was from New York City. I was cultured, right? Like I went to a school that exposed me to opera and ballet, even though my family didn't have means to do that.
Yeah.
But I was always fighting the assumption that I didn't deserve to be there.
Yeah, I totally relate. You know, I'll tell you that I said this to my wife. I said, I keep thinking that someone's going to come and tell me that my master's degrees were just fake, or like it didn't happen, or like, you know, you didn't do something and that's why it's not valid. And I'm like, that's a bit crazy, because very few people have that kind of, you know, those thoughts. And it's not because you didn't do it, because of the other things that have happened around that have told you other things, like, you don't look like a Ronsley. What does that mean? I've never met another Ronsley, so I don't even know what another Ronsley is supposed to look like. On that note, I think what's important to talk about is voice and representation, and also these stories that might have been lost, and why it's so important for us, however hard and however difficult and however controversial it could potentially land up becoming, that we've got to sort of raise our voices. So let's start with what matters to you. I know education means a lot. I know what you care about, but let's start with me not putting any words in your mouth and you saying, okay, hey, this is what I think that we should start looking at. This is what I believe in.
I believe strongly that organizations would be in a better place if there were more women voices at the table, right? We don't even have women the table at a senior level, let alone like a CEO. And that's for everything, right? Across the board.
Yeah.
If you don't have people who come from a variety of different experiences or bring different perspectives to the table, then you're really just talking to yourself.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it's easy to bring people on. It is easy, as difficult as people try to say that we just can't find any. Oh my goodness, we just can't find any. Like, give me a break, right? Yeah. Like, the reason you can't find them is because you're looking for people that meet the same exact...
in the wrong places, or in the right place, yeah.
But you're also looking for somebody that's had the same trajectory of everybody else you've got at the table. But if you're really reflecting, what you're trying to do is change the people at the table, so you also have to consider other trajectories.
Yes.
And you really need to think about capacity to succeed, not necessarily like... there are people who have the capacity to succeed that have never been given the opportunity. And we need to do that at a variety of levels, not just at the top.
Sure.
Right? We'll have the greatest impact when we reflect that more so on top. But the other thing is, like, how are you setting those individuals up for success? Right? I have stayed as long as I have. I've been in the VaynerX world now for over 9 years. And I've seen people come and go, right, who look like me, who come from similar communities. Why do I stay? Because no place is perfect.
Yeah.
And I do not exist in a bubble of thinking that there is a perfect place. I stay here because even though we too have our flaws and I would love to see more diversity, I see the effort. And while sometimes we have stumbles and we take setbacks, I see the continued effort.
Yeah.
I also feel like I know Gary's heart.
Yes.
Right? And I also have been able to have very candid conversations with him.
Yeah.
Things. Mm-hmm. Right? And I know where he's coming from.
Yeah.
I'm also like, if I didn't agree,
share
that.
Yeah.
But I always am able to share it.
Yes.
And I never feel like there's a repercussion for me having shared it. And that's a huge reason that I stay.
Sure.
Can't say that about a younger version of me, but this version of me would not hold back.
Yeah.
Because I would be completely comfortable with somebody saying, like, you know what, I don't think it's going to work out here. And I would say, you know what, I agree.
Yeah.
And feel confident enough that I would land on that.
Sure.
But that's not the case for everyone.
Right? Yes.
But I prefer to stay at the place that I know is trying to make progress and is making concerted effort.
Yeah.
Whose intentions are in the right place.
Yeah.
And it's working also really hard to have the actions follow up with that intention.
Yeah.
So I want to see more of that representation. I've gotten to the point in my career where, like, there is a common thread. I wanted the initial stages of my career were in higher education.
Yeah.
Why did I choose to work at colleges and universities? Because I struggled not having seen people that looked like me, because I felt like I couldn't open up to anyone because they wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
And so I went to work in higher education because I was like, you know what? If there was one person that wasn't a Spanish professor that looked like me, that might have made a difference.
Sure.
So you know what?
Yeah.
There's value in that career, and so I'm going to study to be that person. Mm. And that's what I did. I got a master's in higher ed administration. I worked at a number of different colleges and universities, and I was that person for a lot of people. And I've found so much value in doing that. I lost my desire to do that work because they were moving me up the ladder and moving me away from the
ground.
So then I kind of found another place. And while on paper, a career marker doesn't look like that, especially at the time that I came in, how many Latinos did you see heading up agencies? Like, most of the Latinos I saw in marketing all worked at Hispanic agencies.
Yeah.
I never wanted to work at a Hispanic agency because I didn't want to be pigeonholed.
Well, why same? I mean, I feel there's a lot of overlap here. And you know what? The thing that stands out for me, Maribel, is when I asked you the first question, you did not go into what you did to get here, which is fascinating, right? Because I think that normally that's, I've done 1500 of these interviews. So I have a tendency to know what trends are, but you went to foundation, which has been destroyed by colonization, to be honest. Like, I know for a fact, I'm one of three people in my class that made it out of my home state. And we had four divisions of 60 people each. India's a lot of people that graduated from that school, and I'm one of three. And if I didn't have the parents that I had, if they didn't have the parents that they had, the chances, very small chances of me being the person I am today. And as a population, if we can understand the value of our parents and our grandparents, we can understand the role we play in the new silicon artificial intelligence, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I love that you opened up with the way you started this and the way it's so different. And that's why it's important to be brought to the table, because that perspective is important, right?
There's no progress in continuing to do the same thing. It is the definition of madness.
It is.
Right? So how else are you going to have a different conversation?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and, you know, I've been focused primarily on marginalized communities or identities. But even my coming into the advertising world, right, I was a really hard sell. Advertising traditionally is people come out of college having studied business or advertising. They go into this machine and they work their way up the ladder. I was 32 years old. I went back for an MBA, but I worked in the nonprofit and education sector. I never worked in traditional marketing. Right. I had this pipe dream of a thing called social media marketing that nobody was even talking about. There were very few agencies, right?
Yeah.
This was the same time that Gary founded VaynerMedia.
Yeah.
So the same like disbelief and like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
Was what I was facing when I was getting my MBA and saying this was what I wanted to do. But I saw the opportunity to do something new, right? I respected VaynerMedia because it was the first place that I interviewed that they thought the fact that I didn't come from advertising was great.
Wow.
There were folks working here who were stand-up comedians.
Yeah. Yeah.
Came from so many good places. We had folks in like senior creative roles that were creative because they were acting. They were doing comedy, right? Like they came at it from a very different perspective. Those folks never would have made it into a traditional agency. You know what? They have a lot of traditional agency jobs now, but Gary created that, right? And so just the fact that this place was just like, wow, you worked in higher ed, you worked with college age students. At the time, we were a community management shop. The vast majority of the staff here was like 22, 23, 24 years old. They were like, you're going to be great managing these people. And I was like, oh my God, you get it. And I didn't have to explain it to you.
Yes.
Right. So I was like, this is a place that's always been like, oh, that's pretty cool. Yes. How do we bring that thinking in here?
Yes.
So many organizations would benefit from that. But again, we don't give people a chance because as much as we say, we're hiring for diversity. No, you're hiring for people who meet the same criteria you've always hired against, but have a different last name, or you can look at them and be like, they're a little different. That's not hiring for true diversity.
Yeah.
Like diversity of experience, diversity of thought, diversity of facets.
Mm.
Right? Like, I want somebody to come in and totally like shake shit up.
Yeah.
Because that's how we're going to do something innovative.
Sure.
Hey, it's Mick Hawes, host of The Toolshed. I love making my podcast, and that's primarily because Ronsley has helped me avoid a whole bunch of really basic mistakes that would have cost me a whole bunch of time, money, and energy. And Rons has compiled a list of these mistakes and how to avoid them, which is really a steal. You can get your copy where I downloaded mine at mistakes.wearepodcast.com. That is mistakes.wearepodcast.com. We Are Podcast. You can't find your voice if you don't use it.
Let's talk about the current landscape because I'm very cognizant of your time. So the current landscape, social media marketing, you mentioned that we spoke about cohorts a lot, and I feel like that's a really cool way to look at marketing today, especially the way things are. Would you like to explain that and how you here at the Sasha Group at VaynerX are using that as a marketing advice for people and businesses?
So if I try to simplify it, I would say we talk about cohorts, one, because we're trying to differentiate the terminology from what's traditionally used in advertising, right? Advertising, we have audiences, we have targets, which is how we find that audience in the media landscape. And then we had like some audiences or some target, and all that is a way of saying like, this one's important to us, but not as important as the first one. The challenge is that the way that terminology exists today really came from a place of like general market advertising, where you were creating a TV ad and that was meant to broadly speak to as many people as possible without alienating anybody. Which more like content available to them. We have so much more choice, right? We've gotten four networks that we have the option of watching. But again, when there are only four, you're trying to go run sweeps and speak to everyone. Well, now we have choices, and people pick what they're going to consume based on what connects most with them. But in order to connect, you actually have to go deeper. And so that actually means that you need to understand that at times it's my 99th that is front and center, right? And that you're going to be able to connect with me by showing me powerful stories for my community of people that look like me. But oh, hey, guess what? I've been a New Yorker. Like a New York City girl most of my life. So another point of intersectionality for me is that. And so there's like, that is a way for you to reach deeply.
Yeah.
Right? Like I'm first generation, parent, you know, a child of immigrants. Like, want to talk about that? Like, wow, yeah, we got a lot that we can talk about, right? So if we're truly going to connect deeply with somebody, you have to start getting further inked. You have to peel more layers of the onion that.
Yeah.
And that's what cohort.
Yes.
Right. Cohorts is like, sure, in general, you can say, like, you know, what folks have been saying is like, moms, 25 to like 45.
Yeah.
Like, for ages, we've been saying that. We've gotten better in that now we're thinking of variations of that to some degree. But what we're saying is like, no, you need to go like just deeper into that and actually create a lot of content against these types of nuanced cohorts.
Yeah.
We were speaking to a company earlier this week. They said they were targeting like soccer moms. And I was just like, this thing you're selling is something I would totally be interested in. I'm not a mom, and I'm not a mom by choice.
Yes.
I have disposable income.
Yes.
I am, you know, perimenopausal and all about my health and doing things. Your service totally would be attractive to me. But if all of your is focused on soccer moms, you're totally going to miss me.
Brilliant.
And so if I had to give one example, that's an example. How, if you were thinking about cohorts, you would actually start with thinking about like people who are prioritizing their health, right? Like people who are prioritizing their health, but they're not like gym rats.
Yes.
Or they're not like, you know, highly particular around their food. And that's going to include women who are perimenopausal and are looking to like, right? It's going to include like moms who have busy schedules in urban cities, but we're going to add more layers to that, right? We had a conversation with them around like, look, even if let's say soccer moms is one of your targets, you also have to recognize you're a franchise and the soccer moms that you're working with in Colorado are going to be really different than what it actually, if you're also going to open in Atlanta, that's not a soccer mom, that's a football mom or a basketball mom.
Correct.
And her interests are going to be slightly different.
Sure.
Right? Sure. And by the way, what about like the single dads raising? Or what about like the grandmas that are raising? Like, right? Like now we start that. But, so it's just like getting more nuanced because that deeper, that greater nuance, that deep, provides for a deeper connection, but it also is much better fodder for creativity.
Yeah.
The content is better.
Yeah.
So it's like everybody wins then.
So it's like niching within a niche.
But it does require the investment to create a lot more content.
Of course.
But it's so easy to create content.
These days,
it's
right.
It's never been so easy to create content.
100%.
So if you accept like that technology has made it that much easier for us to create content because we carry a production studio in our hand on a daily basis, then you shouldn't be overwhelmed by the fact that like it requires more content creation.
Well, I have to say the last time I did this interview in this same room was James Orsini a year ago, and I had to carry a suitcase of my gear. And I don't do that anymore because it's changed so much. And that's 1 year on. It's not even that long. But I want to land this plane really quickly. And I would love some advice for people like us who, while growing up, did not necessarily see someone that we could go to. And the advice is on them speaking up for what they believe in. And if you had anything around, that would be a great way to end this.
Because I share this all the time. What is the worst that can happen, right? We're freaking out. You're stressed about the worst that could happen. In your mind, the worst that could happen is you get fired, right? Is that a possibility? Yes. But as my therapist likes to say, right, like, typically speaking, the things we fear the most very rarely actually come into play. So one is find comfort in that. But let's say you get fired.
Yeah.
Right? When they find a way of letting go kindly, then I say, you should know sooner rather than later if that is a place that doesn't deserve your talent.
Yes.
Right? Because if you were to just not know because you're scared to challenge and you're scared to have that conversation, then I think like you're wasting your gifts because there is a place that will embrace you, that will embrace your feedback, and that's where you should.
Amazing. Maribel, this was a little slice of heaven. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. Listen to the back catalog of over 300 episodes by going to wearepodcast.com. If you're looking for something specific, let the We Are Podcast team point you in the right direction. Send us an email on podcast@wearepodcast.com. Also, if you know a business owner who has a podcast, ask them to listen. Share an episode with them. The conversations here are going to save them lots of trial, error, time, and money. Until next week, much love.